Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here are your hosts, Joe Kuzma and Brian E. Roach.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast. My name is Joe Kuzma, and as always, joined by my version of Patrick Starfish, a one Mr. Brian E. Roach. Brian, what's going on?
Howdy, 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 howdy.
I was just playing that, man. You're stealing my thunder. I wasn't going to sing it, but we had some of the big band, the blues stuff going in the background here at the back rooms of Steel City Underground, and we were having a little bit of fun the bye week, although we've been seeing more purple than blue. I mean, it's kind of almost nauseating between seeing the Ravens game the other day and also watching what the Patriots did on Monday Night Football. Just, you know, it's very tough to have a week without Steelers football, but then the football gods had to also extend this torture into Monday. So you get to wait like an additional day to get your, you know, Steelers fix. The only saving grace is, though, Brian, the Miami Dolphins Monday Night Football game is on my birthday this year. So I will be celebrating in the Berg. And yeah, don't expect to hear me on the post game. Pre game, I'll be around. Post game, I don't know where I may end up.
Well, advanced happy birthday here, and hopefully your birthday wishes will all come true.
You know, from the sounds of things, Mike Tomlin is just, you know, he's bringing me down, man. It's like, well, here's all these guys that are hurt. It's just like there's only, what, 53 guys on the roster, and I think he named like 58. I mean, it's just everybody.
Something like that, yeah.
Man, I mean, just everybody. There's just, you know, the Steelers, we shouldn't even be talking at this point whether or not the Steelers could potentially get into the playoffs. They lost their starting quarterback, their future Hall of Fame guy, the gunslinger, you know, Ben Roethlisberger. And he goes down, and then all of a sudden everybody wants the offensive coordinator fired, Randy Fichtner. For what reason, I can still not figure out. I mean, everybody wanted Todd Haley fired before that, including Ben Roethlisberger. He gets his quarterback coach, of which everyone gives credit to everything for, including last year's, I guess, success, because I don't know if the failures – did everybody just pin the failures on Antonio Brown, or what was the case there? I mean, Ben threw a lot of picks. So now all of a sudden it's the offensive coordinator's fault, and it's just like, look, folks – nobody's getting fired in season here unless there's like a monumental collapse. The Steelers really, even at 2-4, still, you know, they're not out of it. I think the most disheartening thing is, though, you watch that Ravens and Seahawks game on Sunday, and you see the Seahawks, I mean, and Russell Wilson literally throw it away. I mean, there was the pick six, and everybody's going to talk about that Marcus Peters trade, and it's like, I don't really care because I have a good feel for what kind of player he is, and you know, the guy gets turnovers. He happens to be in the right spot. But I think you or I, Brian, could have made that pick six. It was just a bad throw by Russell Wilson, of all people, who was having an MVP season going in. They completely crapped the bed. We see DK Metcalf. You know, he literally catches a ball, goes to run with it, and then he drops it. I mean, this isn't Juju getting the ball punched away by Marlon Humphrey on a bang, bang, you know, good play between two pros. This was like, you know, your hands are full, bring groceries in from the store, and you know better than to not have your hands full, and he drops the ball, and that was like another touchdown for the Ravens, and it's the reason why it looked like, for those who didn't really watch the game, it's the way it looked like that. I mean, Lamar Jackson still, and I understand, okay, the tight ends dropped some passes. Mark Andrews probably should have caught. He was 2 of 8 targets. He was targeted 8 times, only caught 2 of them. That made Lamar Jackson 9 of 20. He had a 69.4 rating in that game. No touchdowns, no interceptions, but that's all they had to do with the Seahawks, because much like the way the Steelers beat the Chargers, it was all held up by the defensive stuff. Now, one more thought on this game before I move on, because the Ravens, the Browns, and the Bengals are all integral parts of this discussion today, looking ahead at the Steelers' opportunity to maybe make the postseason, looking ahead at the rest of the schedule. But I don't know if you got to see this game either, Brian, but okay, so the announcers, which I believe one of which, the color guy, was Dan Fouts, so this should give you an idea of where we're going already.
Okay.
I think it was at the near the end of the first half, and Pete Carroll challenges a defensive pass interference call that was not made on the field on DK Metcalf, right? And it was a good solid grab on the inside of his shoulder pads and a little more of like some arm fighting, potentially even a split second of pinning an arm back. And they were literally making fun of Pete Carroll for challenging this, because they were talking about how, well, the referees aren't known to overturn these now from how they were called on the field for this season. There's only like 7 of almost, I don't know, it was like 40-some, almost 50 that have actually been overturned. And I'm sitting there like, you goofs, do you not realize the reason he's challenging this is because he literally won a game by challenging it and getting it overturned in his favor when Terrell Edmonds was called for the most ticky-tacky thing. It was much more ticky-tacky than this. This was a grab that was completely missed. And then for whatever reason, I'm going to coin a term, Brian. And we know we coin a lot of terms. Some people steal them. Some people borrow them, you know, like grown-ass man. But I got a new one for you to add to the ref stink. Teams are getting river-oned now. They are getting river-oned. It reminds me of playing Texas Hold'em. What happens on the river? Well, what usually happens is whatever the National Entertainment Football League would like to happen, and that was, you know, for whatever reason, not overturning this, and it would have been a pretty big play. Might have get some more points to the Seahawks, whatever. It may not have made a big difference in the final end of it, especially with the turnovers that the Seahawks committed. But I just get annoyed at seeing some of these replays, and that's far from the only game with problems from this weekend. But it's the one that annoyed me the most, because the Steelers had both of these teams beat, and then you have bad calls or bad decisions on the field, let's say even like a no call, that, you know, decide the outcome.
Yeah, you know, we've actually used that term in the past, river-oned, being, you know, the Steelers being a team that has been river-oned many times. You know, not the only one out there, though. Certainly not the only one out there, but we've definitely been river-oned several times. Might have to be a new gift for me. I may have to get a river-oned gif to go with the ref stink gif. But look, I didn't get a chance to watch the Ravens game. And while I'm not terribly upset about that, because, you know, just hearing that they won annoyed me enough that I didn't really feel compelled to have watched it and get more aggravated with the process. What you're bringing up about this pass interference stuff is cuts to the core of my refs stink ranting, which, and we said this last time, it's consistency. You know, I get that at this point, I think it's foolish for any coach to challenge a pass interference call, because they simply are, they don't know what pass interference is either. And, you know, they look at it, and you picked a great example. The Terrell Edmonds pass interference that gets called
wasn't called on the field.
On the field, but that gets overturned to be called was, you know, about as insubstantial as you could get, right? Whereas more than once, a pass interference call has not been made that clearly is more egregious than that one. There's another good word, egregious.
I love it.
It doesn't get overturned. There needs to be a level of consistency. And this was a fear early on when we first heard about this rule, was that, you know, overturning pass interference, what's going to be the standard? Because pass interference calls in and of themselves are somewhat opinion-based and from your own perspective, you know, because refs don't see everything. I'll give them that. They're not always in the best position. But the problem is, if you're going to make this a challengeable call and you've got 7,000 angles to look at, you should be getting it right, not wrong, most of the time. And set a standard. What is and what isn't pass interference? If Edmonds was pass interference, the call you're talking about was pass interference.
Yes, that's the point.
To be honest with you, if Edmonds is pass interference, breathing on receivers is pass interference. So, you know, it's I seek consistency, which is a futile quest for the ring of power, and I can't help it. It is what it is. So they just stink.
Yeah,
what can I say? If, and you know,
if that's pass interference,
we're gonna get river-oned. Yeah,
Riveron. If those calls are pass interference calls, then Sammy Coates is a top 10 receiver still in the NFL and not, you know, pursuing an XFL career, because you don't even have to worry about him catching the ball. He just has to run fast and have somebody grab at him. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it's, you know.
Yeah, there you go.
I keyed. But the reason I brought all this up is not only the cry to spilled milk thing. The other problem is that, you know, I'm looking at all these yards. Okay, yes, I know the Greg Roman offense is running all over the place right now. I don't know how sustainable that's going to be, and I almost feel, and trust me, I've felt this way for years. This isn't a Lamar Jackson only thing. This goes back to even like Tim Tebow, RG3, and Colin Kaepernick. He took the team all the way to the Super Bowl with very similar quarterback running thing, because it's like you can't breathe on a quarterback. But if they're a mobile quarterback, you know, this is where I'm going to go with this. If they're a mobile quarterback, like the guys I named, like Lamar Jackson, it's almost like there should be a whole other set of rules here. This isn't a guy who just gives himself up when he slides or something. He's literally diving out there, you know what I mean? And good for him for being such a gamer, but I look at this and I shiver at the thought that this guy's going to get hurt. And they've made it in such a way that the players wear skirts that you can't touch the guy, a la the Ola roughing the passer that wasn't a roughing the passer, which was another bad call. But then you turn around and you see over all the years that how many times Ben's been hit or Cam Newton has been hit. And, you know, it's just one of those things where there's a whole different set of rules. Those guys were no less mobile. They're bigger guys, you know, that take hits, and that's just not necessarily fair. I think that they have, like, it's almost like two different sets of rules, you know, or maybe even three, because if Brady gets breathed on or Aaron Rodgers gets breathed on, then, you know, they're throwing flags at those too. So I think they have to figure this out. I think this is something where, you know, the Baltimore Ravens brain trust, it used to be Joe Flacco throw it down the field and get a bunch of pass interference calls. Now it's maybe we could draw something with Lamar running the ball, whether he runs it or not, or whether he gets, you know, held up or tries to escape or whatever be the case. And I guess that's just really my point is that it's tough to watch these calls because you're not seeing anything that's consistent among the officiating from game to game. And my main gripe is too, is that the Steelers, not only, you know, being competitive in close games with these two teams, maybe it turns out a different way and they have a different record based on these calls. I understand it is what it is. A record says what it is. You can't change any of that, but it's more or less all the people that were crying, expecting the Seahawks to help the Steelers out. This should have been a definite loss. You saw the analysts on TV. See, they all picked the Seahawks to win this game. And Ravens go up there and they win, and it was raining, and there were some other things that were involved in that as well. But I just want to throw this out there. Okay, so they beat the Seahawks. That's not to say that they're not going to lose to some other team on the schedule. We don't expect them to. There's always the possibility the Bengals, who've had their number in the past, they got to play there, and they have a bye week, so it's actually like 3 weeks. They got to play in Cincinnati, and I know that Cincinnati has been a dumpster fire, and Andy Dalton threw 3 picks out of 5 attempts against the Jaguars, and they had their game sewn up. They were up like, I think, 10 going into the fourth quarter and blew it against Jacksonville on Sunday. But, I mean, it's just, you know, the Jets, look what the Jets did. Absolutely nothing against the Patriots. They get the doors blown off of them on Monday Night Football, and the previous week against the Cowboys, they beat the Cowboys. And what sense does any of this make? None. So we can't really, you know, we try to make like an educated guess and look at the Steelers' schedule, because all of a sudden it's doom and gloom and it's over, pack it up, and it's like these guys didn't even play this week. They had a bye. And I understand they're nursing some injuries. We're going to talk about some of that as we get more, you know, into the injury reports and practices that are going on. But we're going to look ahead at this schedule. I just want to remind everyone, though, that last year, you know, you take a look at the Baltimore Ravens and the Steelers positions last year, and you're wondering if the script can flip. Before the Ravens entered a Week 10 bye, they were 4-5, having just lost to the Steelers in Pittsburgh on November 4th. Turn their season around, and they end up finishing 10-6 on the year, and they win the AFC North with a 10-6 record because the Steelers, who, you know, they go into November 4th, they're 5-2-1 when they beat the Ravens. They pick up 2 more wins against the Panthers and Jaguars. They're 7-2-1. They're kind of sitting pretty, or so you think. And then all of a sudden, what do? They drop three in a row. They drop four out of five. And what is it? Four of their last six. The only team they beat is the eventual Super Bowl champions, the Patriots. And then a really ugly win in the final week against the Bengals to finish 9-6-1 and just miss out of the playoffs. So with the Steelers having roughly, they're six games in. It's a 16-game schedule. They're done with the bye. There are 10 games left. And Brian and myself now are going to look at these games. We're also going to look at the rest of the division. And we're going to, you know, basically, let's put our stamp on this, Brian. Currently sitting at 2-4, are the Steelers' playoff hopes still alive?
I think it's clear that, yes, the playoff hopes are still alive. And when you look at, and which we're going to do, when we look at not just the Steelers' remaining schedule, but the schedules of both the Browns and the Ravens, I think we can probably discount the Bengals now. As a spoiler for the other teams. It is not out of the realm of possibility, and it's not even out of, you know, history. It's current history shows that this is not a point in time where it's time to give up and throw in the towel. The Steelers have a legitimate shot at making the playoffs. They have a legitimate shot at winning this division still. But let's get into it as we look at the schedule and see whether that is really something that is got some potential and some meat to the bones, so to speak, or whether we're, you know, whistling Dixie, so to speak.
Well, I mean, 10-6 is what it took for the Ravens to win a division last year. You had an AFC conference where you had an 11-5 New England Patriots team, 10-6 Ravens, 11-5 Houston Texans, followed by a 10-6 Indianapolis Colts team for the wild card. And of course, the Chiefs and Chargers both were 12-4, and the Chiefs took the division by tiebreakers, but the Chargers, you know, were the default wild card because, you know, that's how it works. You get the four teams that get in by winning their division, and then two extras by the next best records throughout the conference. And the hope there was, you know, that the Steelers could have snuck in if the Browns would have beat the Ravens in the final week last year, and it was the Steelers' kind of deal to lose. And the reason I'm pointing out the 10-6 is I think that's where the Steelers have to be. You cannot be anything less and expect to get anywhere. So at 2-4, you know what that means, Brian. They can only lose two of these next 10 games. They're going to have to put together eight wins. You look up and down the schedule, and they kind of control their destiny in a few ways, because as I look around the rest of the AFC, I think the easiest path, obviously, is to win the division. But you look at some of the other teams in contention right now. Obviously, in the AFC East, the Patriots are undefeated at 7-0. Buffalo Bills are second there at 5-1. The Jets and the Dolphins are, you know, pretty much, you know, out of this conversation as well. The Browns have the same record as the Steelers, and of course they're going to meet each other twice coming up here. So those are going to be important games. Destiny is in the Steelers' hands there within their division. They got to do something, and they're going to have to at least split the Ravens, I believe, and they nearly did, losing in overtime, because you can't allow Baltimore to go 6-0 in a division. I don't know that Baltimore will go 6-0, but they're already 2-1 in the division, so they get to play everyone one more time, and one of those will be against the Steelers to close out the season. You look around everywhere else, the Colts are 4-2, the Texans are 4-3. It's the division's a mess here. Jacksonville's 3-4. The Titans are 3-4. So you have no idea. It almost looks like a coin flip right there. Chiefs got out to a hot start, 5-2, but now Patrick Mahomes, who knows what his status is going to be. That's a pretty big blow to them. We'll see how they can manage with that. You got the Raiders sitting at 500 at 3-3. So the Steelers are really a game out from them. The Broncos and Chargers are each 2-5, and the Steelers already have a win over the Chargers. Even if the Chargers were to kind of rally late, they kind of have that advantage, considering that the Steelers win some games, and that's going to be the important part here as you look ahead. They do have, again, they play Buffalo, so that's a team that's going to be within the wheelhouse there as far as maybe some standings are concerned, depending on how Buffalo's schedule goes. Because, I mean, the Buffalo Bills coming up, they've already had their bye week. They just beat beat the Dolphins. Crazy onside kick return for a touchdown deal there in a tightly contested game. We'll be talking about that more because we're going to be talking about that as far as the Dolphins are concerned with Monday Night Football in our preview later in the week. But the Bills get like the Eagles. Okay, the Redskins aren't too hot. They play the Browns. So you got some head-to-head things here that you're hoping happens. Of course, they get the Dolphins again, Broncos, Cowboys, Ravens. Then the two road games out of the three last games are at Pittsburgh, at New England, and then a home game against the Jets. So that's just looking at the wild card picture with them. There's only two wild card spots, and I think that's the team you really got to keep your eye on mostly right now. I don't know that I'm going to hang my hat on the Raiders, Broncos, or Chargers being in that in that contention. You got to look at the AFC South, but those teams are already kind of, you know, on that kind of back end too. You got to imagine if the Steelers win this upcoming week against the Dolphins, that puts them at 3-4, so they're in the same pack with some of those AFC South teams. So really they got to beat out, I think, the Browns and the Bills if you're looking at a wild card. But I kind of want to look ahead and see also if they could win this division. Of course, you were, as everybody was, entitled and expecting, everybody wanted the Ravens to drop this game against the Seattle Seahawks. That didn't happen on the road, and that's a tough game. And this is the difference. The Ravens are coming away with some of these wins, like the close game against the Steelers or this win against the Seahawks, whereas the Steelers have dropped some close games, maybe even the one against San Francisco, to be completely honest. But after the bye, you know, it's going to be the Ravens and Patriots. Then they go to Cincinnati. Then they have the Texans, Rams, and 49ers before closing out with the Bills, Jets, and then the Browns and Steelers. So there's a lot of divisional football there, and there's a lot of teams here currently with winning records. You got the Patriots, the Texans. I mean, the Rams, they were in the Super Bowl last year, so let's not discount them even based on record right now. An undefeated 49ers team currently. We just mentioned 5-1 Bills, and then we'll see what ends up happening, you know, with the Jets, Browns, and Steelers. Really a lot of football to play for a lot of these teams, factoring in where the Steelers go, and we haven't even done that yet.
Yeah, you know, look, if you want to piece the Ravens schedule together and look at it, there's certainly a reasonable possibility that come the first 5 weeks after their bye, that they could be sitting at 6-6. They could conceivably go 1-4. I'm not willing to think that the Bengals are going to play spoiler there yet because the Bengals haven't shown me anything. But I think you can see simply by the fact that a Seahawks team that was playing at a much higher level than they showed against the Ravens, you know, botched that game up, made a lot of mental mistakes, and give the Ravens credit that they took advantage of them to win the game. But, you know, you never know whether the Ravens are going to have a down game at some point in time. Could happen against the Bengals. But, you know, I think it's safe to say you expect them to lose against the Patriots. You know, the Texans game is up in the air. Could go either way. The Rams game, because it's in L.A., you kind of give the nod to the Rams. And then the 49ers, who are playing really well, even though it's in Baltimore, you know, again, you think, all right, that's also a losable game. So it's not out of the realm of possibility to see them sitting at 6-6 at that point. And even at that point, if they go, you know, and they beat the Bills, let's say, and that's not a given because it's in Buffalo. If they lose, you know, they beat the Jets, they're 8-6, and the Browns already walloped them once in Baltimore. So who's to say that the Browns don't take advantage of that again and manage to win again and sweep them by beating them in Cleveland? And then the Steelers at the end of the season, you're looking at a team that could be 8-8 or 9-7 or even worse. Just depends on how things go on. And the Ravens have managed to avoid you know, the kind of devastating injury bug that a lot of other teams have. But again, they play that kind of offense where they put their quarterback at risk quite a bit because he's running the ball a lot. So who's, you know, not that I'm wishing harm on anyone, but with the way the season is gone, you never know. And so the Ravens could easily slide with the type of schedule they have laid out ahead of them. I will say this about what the Steelers have upcoming. To me, their shot at winning the division means they need to sweep the rest of their division games. You know, they need to beat Cleveland twice. They need to take care of business in Cincinnati, and I believe that they'll have to win that game in Baltimore at the end of the season. But if they do that, I think there's a very reasonable chance that they are the division champs at the end of that time.
Yeah, and I mean, you have to take care of business with the Browns too. I mean, now the Browns are going to get they're going to get the Patriots this upcoming Sunday, but then they have the Broncos, Bills, of course, Steelers, Dolphins, Steelers, Bengals, Cardinals, Ravens, Bengals. So the Browns may also be on a rebound as well, looking at what they have ahead. The Steelers got to maintain some momentum and stay ahead of that. You could even look at this, and I mean, the Browns, they have the talent. They've also had some injuries as well. So, you know, it's a team with talent. I don't necessarily know that they're a great team either. I mean, you're looking at it almost from the same kind of microscope now as the Steelers without, you know, the franchise quarterback and missing a key starter on defense into it and things of that nature. They've been without most of their secondary. They lost David Njoku. But their offensive line hasn't been as great. You got a second-year quarterback. You got a first-year head coach. So there's still a lot of intangible factors, but maybe they grow as the season goes, and maybe they gain some momentum. You're almost looking at maybe a three-way kind of situation here where basically the Steelers can't stumble. I think any more than two losses will be devastating to their hopes. Now, where can those losses be? You can't screw up against the Dolphins. That's number one.
No.
You know what? I'm going to pull this up for the next show. I'm going to see what their record is against Ryan Fitzpatrick. I haven't seen anybody pull out like all of the stats, but how many times have they played this guy? They played him when he was at Buffalo. And they beat him up in Buffalo, I believe. There was that game where they had – was that the 0-4 year or close to it? It was one of the 8-8 seasons where there was all those turnovers against the Texans. I believe it was 8 – and he was part of that team too. And then the Buccaneers last year. So they played this guy multiple times. They kind of have like, you know – what do you want to say? Familiarity with him. He is a veteran journeyman quarterback, but he can still be dangerous at times. The Colts are a dangerous team, too. You never know what's going to show up with them. You never know what's going to show up with them. And I think the Steelers' defense is capable. See, this is where the shimmer of hope kind of comes from, is if the Steelers' offense, which still has its full offensive line intact, you're getting your young quarterback who's growing back, who you know, he hadn't made any major mistakes. He was actually looking, above competent, you know, and that might be all they really need, especially if you have like James Conner or Juju or one of these players, your playmakers start making plays. Vance McDonald, guys like that. There are certainly guys there. They got to get it together. I don't necessarily know that's a Randy Fichtner problem. I think that's we lost Ben and now we have to do everything kind of over and play to strengths, the Mason Rudolph problem. And, you know, that's something that you got to look at too. And that's the thing that bites me, Brian, is you look at the loss to the Seahawks where Ben leaves at halftime. You look at the loss to the Ravens where Rudolph plays, what, the first series of the third quarter before getting knocked out and you had to go to Duck Hodges. They're fortunate that they picked up the win against the Chargers and they did it all on defense. I have no bones about it that their defense gets shut down every single offense they're going to play the rest of this season. Dolphins, Colts, the Rams have not been sharp. Jared Goff is another pick master, and so is Baker Mayfield. These guys are throwing them up for grabs. And I look at everything else here. So the Browns twice, the Bengals again, who haven't been very good, but you play in Cincinnati, on the road at Arizona. We don't necessarily know where the Cardinals are going to be at that point if they're starting to collect their everything, but all intents and purposes there, they're not a very strong unit overall. We'll see where the Buffalo Bills lie. That's a home game, the last home game. And then there's the Jets. I mean, the Jets have either been hot or cold, and some of that's been with Sam Darnold having been out. And then a potential maybe an AFC North Championship game that's going to be played at Baltimore, and you don't know what kind of ragtag crew you're going to have by that point because it's it's the walking wounded. It looked like the Walking Dead cast running around out there right now. You got to hope that everybody's as healthy as can be because these injuries, they are devastating. And as you mentioned, you're not trying to say any ill will toward Lamar Jackson, but this is the same stuff people talk about with Christian McCaffrey as well. How many touches are you going to give the guy? How much pounding is he going to take? Running backs don't last long in the league, and they're using him as a running back primarily. He completes some passes, yes. I think it's, for lack of better terms, I'm going to call it gimmicky. It works when their guys catch the ball or the passes are on target. That stuff works. But it's not like Lamar Jackson is, you know, lighting up the world with just his arm. It's his feet. And you also got to hope that Mark Ingram holds up. I believe Mark Ingram is in the range of 30 years old right now, or is going to be. So he's up there as well. And I just look at that as if they lose somebody like on their offensive line. Okay, Ingram's 29, so he turns 30 at the end of the year in December. But close enough. That's that age. You know what I mean? Ingram has been pretty integral in this yep. whole thing. I know they use like a complement of backs like Justice Hill and Gus Edwards, but if they lose one of those guys, it's kind of the same thing the Steelers were dealing with Jalen Samuels going down or James Conner going out of a game. And it's no different. It may reset the game.
Yeah, you know, when we look at this, as I said, you know, there's no room for error in the Steelers' part as far as injuries go. They cannot afford another major setback. We anticipate and hope that the defense can muster on without Stephon Tuitt and continue to play at the level they've been playing at. Especially because there looks like they're going to get Steven Nelson back. Maybe they're going to get Mark Barron back. And you know they get some of those guys in, and if Tyson Alou can play up to the level that he once was able to play at, and if Javon Hargrave can contribute, maybe that defense can stay. It's because it is at this point. There's no reason to think the offense is suddenly going to come to life and carry the team. The defense is the strength of this team right now, and it's going to have to be the strength of this team the rest of the way. And I agree with one of the things you said, which is that they have the ability to shut any of these teams down. They absolutely do. Nobody other than that initial Patriots game is blowing the doors off these guys. And when you look back at what they've done, when the offense can give them time to stay fresh, they can be a dominating factor. So that's very key. The second part of this is, you know, when you were talking about what they're doing in Baltimore. You're right. It's like a game of roulette, but it's maybe slightly stacked towards the Ravens in the sense that, you know, they do control how these runs are going and trying not to put them in the riskier runs. But nonetheless, you know, when you choose to pound the ball all the time, that means whoever's running it is going to take abuse. And the more abuse they take, the more their body gets banged up, the more susceptible to injury they are. That's just human nature. That's just the physics of the body, right? There's nothing you can do about that. And if they can all hold up, then great. But I think it is possible to shut that team down. This is not the 59-point Dolphin win, and you really haven't seen that from them again because the teams that they start to play that are better can shut them down.
Yeah, they've shut Lamar Jackson. Yep. In fact, the better teams have. Even the Chiefs, who we don't really respect their defense. You take a look at it. I mean, everyone's making a big to-do about all of the running that Lamar Jackson has done. Well, if you go ahead and take a look at that Dolphins game, he only had 3 carries for 6 yards. I mean, that's pretty interesting. But, you know, they beat the crap out of them 59-10 otherwise, and they didn't really put him at risk. He has, excuse me, I'm trying to find here's his rushing stats. So he has 576 yards and 3 touchdowns so far over 3 games this season, which, you know, that's a lot for a quarterback. But he had the bulk of those. If you go and you take a look, he had 46 against the Chiefs. I mean, these are still a lot for a quarterback, but this isn't, you know, his highs are like 120 against the Cardinals, and then he had 152 against the Bengals the previous weekend, and then the last Sunday, 116 against the Seahawks. He wasn't killing the rest of these teams with their feet. You know, the Chiefs contained him to 46. The Browns mostly contained him to 66. The Steelers contained him on 14 carries for 70 yards. The thing here is to point out is that the Browns and Steelers each get another shot at him, and they were the teams that really forced them to turn the ball over, forced 2 fumbles, forced a combined 5 interceptions between between those two back-to-back games. And, you know, you're not going to magically tell me, well, the cure-all was playing the Bengals. I mean, that's pretty much the same thing for the Steelers, we could say, because the Bengals have been bad. But the Bengals were competitive in that game. The Bengals, you know, the Bengals have really been shooting themselves in the foot. I don't see the Bengals turning anything around and being a contender, but they could certainly play spoiler. They could even do the same with the Steelers, to be honest. They still have guys that are capable on their defense. Their offense, it's especially their offensive line. They can't run the football. Did you see the stat the other day, by any chance, Brian, on Joe Mixon and Andy Dalton? Now, I was talking about his turnovers, and as soon as this decides to load. So your leading rusher was Andy Dalton, four times for 33 yards. Now, he got sacked a handful of times, so it didn't necessarily turn out into a positive yardage there when you take that away. But Joe Mixon carried the ball 10 times for a total of 2 yards. Gio Bernard, four times for 0. And Alex Erickson, two times for -2. So between their running backs, 16 times 0 net yards. That's unbelievable. Their offensive line is just so bad. They can't really do anything on the offense, and that's really why the Bengals are where they are. So if anybody tunes in and they were like, well, blah, 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 they've lost 3 offensive linemen now from what they were projected to have in the offseason. We were saying, hey, they have a talented team. They could be dangerous. Well, they could still potentially play spoiler if they figure something out there, even, you know, against anybody within the division, and that would certainly help, but we're not necessarily counting on it, so to speak. I'm trying to see what their actual, I guess so. Dalton's did end up counting for the full amount there, because then he got sacked twice for 18. So, I mean, that's kind of crazy when you think about it. But I look within the division. The Steelers have to be, like you said, perfect, because the Browns are going to be chomping at the bit there, and the Bengals can still play spoiler, and we just hope they don't play spoiler with the Steelers.
Yeah, you know, look, the Bengals have a history of beating the Ravens once in the year. So let's just hope that that continues in Cincinnati and they manage to win that game. But, you know, and if they split with the Browns, that would be tremendous. But I'm going to be honest and fair. I don't expect the Bengals to win a single game.
Really? They're going to go 0-16.
I looked at their schedule multiple times. There are winnable games on there, but with the way that offensive line has been shredded, I just don't see them being able to generate points, and they will have the same problem the Steelers defense has had, that even though they've got some solid parts on defense, they're going to be on the field the whole game, and they're going to get worn down.
I got two for you. So they play the Rams. They play the Rams on Sunday. Then they have a bye week and host the Ravens at home. So they have a full week to prepare for the Baltimore Ravens. I'm just saying, there could be a spoiler there, and it's happened in the past where we said, no, the Bengals are just junk. But that was with Joe Flacco also choking too. The game I think the Bengals could win week 16 is them playing the Dolphins, because the Dolphins may just pack it up.
that's going to be the battle for the first round pick.
The top overall
in my mind.
Yeah,
but yeah, number one overall. We'll see. Look, you know, if the Bengals. I hate to say things like this, but the Bengals have any pride in them. they may find a way to win a division game. And as you said, I just hope it's not against the Steelers. I'm not worried about the Bengals, because the way our defensive line pairs up against that, what is left of that offensive line is just, it remains to be seen how they're going to generate anything. Mm-hmm. Any team with a strong defensive line, I can see having the same advantage against this team. So I kind of discount them. And while it would be a wonderful thing to see them split with the Ravens and end up winning that game after the bye week, and that is probably the best chance they have, or to split with the Browns, and win one of those two games, I'm not expecting it, which is why, as you said, I said that I think they have to be perfect. The Steelers need to win all 5 of their remaining all 4 of their remaining division games. They need to sweep Cleveland. They need to beat the Bengals again, and they're gonna have to beat Baltimore in Baltimore to end the season. If they can do that, I think that there is an outside chance that 9-7 will get them the division. Ooh. If they can do that.
Ooh.
If they can do that.
Well, that'll be interesting. I want to go back on one other thing I was saying, too, is because, you know, a lot of this talk that I have against the Ravens was more or less because of the reaction to what happened with the Seahawks game. You immediately put on paper, and I alluded to it, and I don't think I made the full circle here. But some people will go, well, the Steelers lost to the Seahawks, and look what the Ravens did. Look at that final score without seeing the full context of what happened in both games. But then you still don't know, even if that were true, as it looks on paper. You go back to what I said about the Jets. The Jets beat the Cowboys and then completely crapped the bed against the Patriots. So nothing is ever given in a National Football League. And that's the way Mike Tomlin's approaching the Dolphins game, too. So, sorry, I wanted to interject and throw that in there real quick so it just didn't seem like I was raining on the Ravens parade. But they do have a significantly more difficult schedule going ahead as opposed to the Steelers and even the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, absolutely. They absolutely do. They've got a lot of big teams that they've got to play. And like I said, you know, it's not inconceivable, but they could be sitting at 6-6, which is why I say if they end up losing to the Steelers, which they've already got one division loss, and the Steelers sweep, now you're talking about the division record going the Steelers' way. So if the Ravens and the Steelers both then ended up at 9-7, and the Steelers have the better division record, with a split 1-1, division record's going to give them the division, which is why they cannot slip up there. In my mind, there are really four risk games, big risk games. Obviously the Rams, the Colts, but I consider both Arizona and Buffalo to be somewhat risk games as well. While I don't think Buffalo's offense is tremendous, their defense has been very good. I do think that, you know, they held the Patriots down very easily. At the same time, they didn't really hold the Dolphins to the same kind of – they allowed the Dolphins to score, which I don't know how you do that.
Well, the Patriots this year have been like all defense, though. And, I mean, a lot of that has been – you know, I've been talking about as to whether or not the Patriots are – is their defense that good, or are teams laying down, or is it both? Because, I mean, it just seemed that way. It felt like the Steelers, like, laid down. It felt like – and, you know, they stunk. The offense was terrible. And, of course, you know, the defense wasn't very good in that game either. And then you see, you know, they beat the snot out of the Dolphins, and then they've already picked up two on the Jets. The Bills game was the closest thing they had. The Redskins, I mean, wasn't that the game, like, and then they just fired Gruden right after that, Jay Gruden.
Yeah.
And then they played the Giants. I'm not even sure if the Giants, did they have Daniel Jones in that game? Yeah, they did, because that was the game I was crying and screaming about, you know, the River on stuff again. So, you know, they put up some points. They've been scoring a lot on the defensive side of things, or the defense is putting them in that position. I just find that an interesting thing. But I'm not worried about the Patriots. I'm not worried about first-round seed or anything like that. I think the reasonable expectation at this point is get your foot in the door, get into the tournament. And as you said, in order to do that, you have to win four division games. Well, great, Brian. That puts us – okay, if we add four to the current record, that gets you to six wins. You say at least nine. I'm saying 10. Where do you pick up the other three? Well, let's look at the other games. I think everybody wants the Dolphins game to be a gimme. I hope it's not a struggle. I hope it's a statement game, honestly, because if it's a statement game, I think our hopes go through the roof. If it's close and tight-knit like the way the Bills just played with them, then we're going to be staring down the gun of like the Colts and the Rams. Despite being at home, you're like, well, this doesn't feel as good now. You know what I mean? But let's just say you flip a coin on those two and you come out of those games 2-1. So where are we at now? We're at 8-5 as far as an overall record. And then the other games to collect, the other three, are between the Cardinals, Bills, and Jets. And I like the same type of situation there. So as long as you could take care of business with the division, or let's just say you pluck out these games, if they won all three of these, the Dolphins, Colts, and Rams, they might be able to afford to lose a division game. But if they do lose a division game, then they may not win the division. They're going to look at the wild card. And the wild card, like I said, I don't want that prospect, because I still think, despite what I say, and I joke about the Cleveland Browns a lot, they're still in a position to do the same exact thing we're looking for the Steelers to do. And that worries me, and I don't want them going, especially since they're going to have to play each other head-to-head within a short period of time. The Steelers are also set up for failure to go on the road on a Thursday night, where road teams don't do well on Thursday nights. I'm almost cringe even thinking about watching that game. So you go from a bye in three straight home games where you haven't been on the road in a month. Now, you're lucky there's a couple bus trips coming here. It's a bus trip to Cleveland, a bus trip to Cincinnati, and then you invite Cleveland for their bus trip before going on the road to Arizona. That's really the game, too. Like you said, you could see this being kind of a trap-type game. I totally agree, because by this time, you're going to be comfortable. You've been at home. You haven't been going very far, traveling much. Now, you go to the West Coast, and you're playing one of these 425 games on the road against a team that, you know, if you end up succeeding, and let's just say they go 5-1 over the next six, they might be hot, and then all of a sudden the Cardinals could surprise them, you know? So, but that's where I see the potential for them. You know, the main problem games right now, Colts, Rams, still the defense with the Rams, of course. Now you're going to have to contend with Jalen Ramsey, you know.
And Aaron Donald.
Yeah, well, always Aaron Donald. Jeez, man.
Always, yeah.
You know, there's an interesting thing that I always think of. What if, man, just another pick or two, right? Another pick or two, and he's part of that front line with assuming that's who they would have taken with Hayward and Tuitt. Oh, my goodness. I mean, maybe we wouldn't be talking about not playing a 3-4.
I don't know, man. That's scary.
It really is. But that's where I see it. I mean, they have to get to the double digit. The double digit for sure to secure either the division or the wild card. If some other things shake out, perhaps they sneak in winning the division with 9 wins, as you said.
Yeah, I think a guaranteed is if they can get to 10 wins, I think that there's no doubt that they'll win the division. Because in order to get to 10 wins, they probably have to beat the Browns twice. The biggest X factor here is, in fact, the Cleveland Browns. And it's not because I think the Browns are all that good. It's because, and I said this early on, they're better than they were. And I'm going to maintain that. They're better than they were. But the Browns scheduled, if you know, over the last set of games, they have three teams over 500 that they play. Yeah. And admittedly, two of those are against us. And we fall into that. But they have a game. They have two games with the Bengals to end the season. A game with the Dolphins, that's, you know, that's a combined set of three games against teams that are 0-13 that don't have a win, you know. So, you know, and then, you know, they have the Ravens and the Bengals to close the season. And, you know, one of those games, they get the Ravens at home. If there's any chance for them, they're probably going to try and win that game. But it's very, that's why I keep saying the Steelers have to win their division games, because if you sweep the Browns, now you can forget about the Browns. If you end up sweeping the Bengals, I'm not even worried about the Bengals. And if you split with the Ravens, you automatically have a better division record than the Ravens at this point, even assuming that they win all the rest of their division games. And that in my mind is why it's so crucial that they take care of business within the North. And I'm not saying that those Brown games are going to be gimmies. They're not. Wow. But they have to win those games. Even if the worst case happened, right, and they took the next three games and they beat the Dolphins but lose to Indianapolis and L.A., right, if they lose both of those games. So that what are they now? They win the Dolphins, they're 3-4, so they're 3-6, right? If they're 3-6, but then they win Cleveland, win Cincinnati, and win Cleveland again, now they're 6-6. And then you've got Arizona, Buffalo, the Jets, and Baltimore. Again, I think there's at least three winnable games amongst that group, and you have to win the Baltimore game. Do all that things, and it's still a possibility. Now, look, I'm going to be here's my real take on the real world. The Steelers are playing without a major contributor on their defensive line and with their second-string quarterback at this point.
Yes.
And with an offense that has not really shown, so to speak. Does that mean that I think it's likely that all this could happen? I don't know that it's likely, but there's a path there. There's reasons not to give up, and that's what I'm saying. There is a possibility. And if the offense can find some life, some of these games are going to be a little easier to win.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in life, it's going to have to be – it doesn't even have to be an insane passing attack, but we saw Rudolph maybe playing a little more aggressive. And speaking of and going downfield where people were like, well, he didn't really – they didn't let him throw downfield. Well, that was like a storyline for 1 week against the Bengals, okay, where, you know, they didn't they set him up for success. They didn't have him throwing into a secondary that's actually pretty solid. We've seen the Ravens kind of be shaky with the secondary, and they added Peters, who I feel, you know, I don't think he's a high motor guy. And, we've seen him quit on plays. And we've seen the Ravens get real aggressive in different spots, too. And we've seen what happens if they have somebody missing also due to injury. And that's the reason why they made that one move, because, you know, Jimmy Smith hasn't been back. And Brandon Carr wasn't really cutting it in his place. They have, like, one solid corner. It was kind of basically the Steelers trying to rotate Burns and Sensabaugh last season and seeing that kind of similar result. And that's the reason why they made the move for Peters. So we'll see how that ends up panning out entirely. But their aggression could be their downfall too. I guarantee you they're going to come out the gate aggressive against the Patriots and try and win that game. And it's going to be interesting to see too, Brian, because, okay, Bill Belichick's like this architect, right? This is the guy that everybody gives credit for when it comes to they take away your weapons, right? What if everybody now, you put this on film, how to shut down Lamar Jackson? I think the Steelers already put it on film. I don't know that every team has the personnel to do it, however. And that's with five linebackers, three safeties, and really shut down and play tough against the run, but still have players that could defend against the pass. The Patriots, I believe, could do that. Their secondary is definitely capable. Now you give the blueprint to the Bengals, who are waiting off of that bye week too, man. I'm just saying, I'm putting it out there.
Yep.
You give the blueprint to the Texans and the Rams, and these teams are making trades and looking at players too. These are some tough defenses that they're going to have to face over the course of five games following the bye. Patriots, okay. I know the Bengals really suck, but imagine if the Bengals get a defensive touchdown, or they're in a similar situation to the way the Chargers fell behind against the Steelers. It's certainly possible. The Houston Texans are definitely a juggernaut. They're going to be able to compete on both sides of the ball. The Rams, I think, will have it figured out. The 49ers, we know, already have it figured out. We already praised the Bills. There's a lot of things going on there, man. And when you get into December football, too, that's a whole other kind of issue. How much wear and tear, what kind of injuries and that add up. And, I mean, we've already discussed some of that, so I'm going to put a bow on it. We're going to see what happens. What I would like to see happen, quite personally, is at least two of the three, if not all three of these games, wins. I want the Dolphins game to be pretty decisive. I don't want any turnovers or boneheaded mistakes. It doesn't mean, I mean, if they give up 21 points to the Dolphins, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it if it's 38-21 final score, okay? Because then that means the offense has done some things, or the defense gets you know, something going there too. The Colts game, if it comes down to Colts or Rams and comes down to a field goal, or it's like five or less points or something of that nature, so be it. What I'd want to see is the Steelers control time of possession, which I think they're starting to get around to that. That'll keep this defense fresh. We already talked about replacements with Stephon Tuitt. I think Javon Hargrave, Mike Tomlin already talked about Tyson Alualu. We discussed Dan McCullers maybe have an expanded role, which sounds silly, but we're only asking 5 to 10 snaps that he doesn't get already. You know what I mean? It's not unheard of.
Yep.
And, whatever roles that Tuitt had on special teams, that could be filled in with either Alualu or Latarius LT Walton, who was re-signed to the team. So I still think that they're going to be able to maintain keep the boat afloat in that regard. I don't see any real regression with the defense. It sucks losing somebody who was having a heck of a year, but it's going to come down to the defense keeps doing the good things they're doing. The offense continues to improve. We see Mason Rudolph grow. We keep people healthy, and then, you know, anything could certainly be possible. But I will leave this rubber stamp of approval. You could burn down Heinz Field if they lose to the Dolphins. Stick a fork in it. So
you said something that I don't agree with.
What's that?
Which is, you won't be upset if the Dolphins score 21 points on the Steelers. I will be upset if the Dolphins score 21 points on the Steelers.
I mean, it all
depends.
And here's
why. 16-10, 6-0, and 10. That's, other than that Bills game, that's all the Dolphins have scored in any single game. They've not, that 21 is the max they've scored. And I don't want them scoring 21 points. If they score 15 points and get two touchdowns, or 14 points and get two touchdowns, I'll be annoyed.
Well, hold on. I'm also saying this within the context of the offense. You know, they come out slow. it's sloppier, makes mistakes. Somebody fumbles. There's an interception. They're in the minus to the turnover ratio for whatever reason. Obviously, you know, Fitzpatrick's in there instead, and maybe they have a little bit more of a semblance of being able to do something with the ball, maybe even in a short area. Trust me, I'm not anticipating 21, but what I'm trying to say is, too, let's say, you know, the Dolphins have like 10 or 13 points or something in the fourth quarter and the game is already a three-score game. Now you start to put in maybe some reserve players or their garbage time points or something like that. So if the Dolphins score 21 in the first half, I probably, you know, it's my birthday or not, I'm just going to leave. I'm going to go to a bar and finish it off for the evening. I'm going to tell you that. So I will clarify what my thought was there, because you're right, that probably didn't come off the best way. So hey, Brian, thanks for joining me once again. I think we're up against it. I don't think we could beat the crap out of this any more than we did. I just, you know, it sucks the Steelers in their first three games didn't pick up one of those wins where they could be sitting at 3-3 at the very least right now, and maybe make it a little bit easier. Yeah. You know,
it's always a pleasure to talk to my brother from another mother. And we will look at what we have upcoming. It is a little aggravating. We got to wait until Monday night to watch this game. But hopefully, after the game, there'll be much celebration and rejoicing, as they would say in Holy Grail land. And there was much rejoicing.
And don't forget, this is the Color Rush. So I really, I got my Minka Fitzpatrick jersey in just the other day last week. And it's like, man, it really would feel right to wear this because he just came over from the Dolphins. But I can't go away. I'm wondering some superstitions from the fans. I pose a question at the end for those of you who stuck around. I always have to wear what they're wearing, man. I feel like if they're wearing Color Rush, I got to wear Color Rush. If they're wearing the traditional black home jerseys, I got to wear that. If they're wearing the black numbers, I got that too. I got to wear that. You won't catch me with old Bumblebee jersey at Heinz Field. They don't wear them anymore. If they're on the road, I got to wear road white, man, or the away white. Or if they happen to play like somewhere where, it's like the Colts and the Cowboys and that wear white at home and they wear black instead, I will still wear black. That's just, I won't say I'm that superstitious that, oh, I chose the wrong jersey or I didn't grab my terrible towel and that's the reason they lost. I think there are greater forces at play in this universe than whether or not I wear the wrong Steelers socks or something like that, But
Let me throw this out there.
Sure.
Yeah, let me throw this out there for you. In the two wins that the Steelers have this year, I have not worn a jersey.
Oh.
In the four losses that the Steelers have this year, I have worn a jersey. So anybody listening to this podcast, in the comments, should I wear a jersey or should I not?
Or should he go completely topless?
No, that's not an option. That's out.
That's a blowout, man. They might score 60 points if you do that. If it starts to trend that direction, we'll see how it works. Just don't send me any texts, any photo texts or anything like that.
If these guys vote me to be topless, if they vote me as topless, you're getting pictures.
Oh, man. Hey, happy birthday to me. Brian in his birthday in his own birthday suit. So anyways, folks, that'll do it for us. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe. My name is Joe. His name is Brian. We'll be back at you later in the week with the pregame show between the Miami Dolphins and Pittsburgh Steelers, as always. And as of now, that is presented by the FanDuel Sportsbook as well. So until next time, everyone, we encourage you to be safe, be good, and we'll catch you later.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.